Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chatting with Dave Erfley, going to be talking about the precious metals complex and what we're seeing in a way kind of under the surface, how it's all relating to the metals prices and what some of the ETFs that follow the stocks are doing. Dave is the founder and editor of the Junior Miner Junkie. Now, Dave, a day like today, look, we have gold, silver up. Copper is actually the one that's really outperforming as it made a run in the futures market to just over $5, but has since pulled back right at $4.90. So still, it's money rotating into the commodities sectors, and it's not just the precious metals too, or just copper, number of metals doing well. But again, diving under the surface, looking at relative performance of the stocks and even silver compared to gold. Gold has, for the most part, been kind of flat for the last month here after peaking in kind of the middle of April. You can make the argument it's simply just consolidating some of these gains. But while it's been moving sideways here, silver has been doing pretty well. Silver kind of peaked also in the middle of April, sold off to the tail end of April, and now has had a good start to May halfway through. And GDX, GDXJ, SIL, SILJ, they're all doing well and continuing their uptrends, more or less. What do you take away from this environment, Dave?
Yeah, last week we started to see something very positive. We saw that the gold price continues to consolidate, like you said, that $450 move. $450 in 2.5 months, that's a huge move, which included a breakout above 13-year resistance. So that needs to consolidate, and it's been doing that in $150 range between 2,300 on the downside and 2,450 on the upside. But the silver price, it came back all the way down to test its 2-year breakout at $26, and it bounced sharply from there. And now it's got a little handle on a 4-year cup, on a cup and handle pattern right below 30. And the miners, we saw 52-week high closes in all four in GDX, GDXJ, SIL, and SILJ, while the highest risk of those four, SILJ, was leading. So you have SILJ leading the miners, and you have silver showing relative strength to gold. So this move, the move higher this week, shouldn't be surprising, because when you have silver and the miners leading the gold price while the gold price is continuing to consolidate its huge gains and still remains $100 below its all-time high, that's very bullish going forward.
Yeah, Dave, I think we've been waiting forever for the scenario to finally set up where the silver was leading gold and the silver miners were finally leading the gold miners, and especially the more speculative juniors. When you look across the board as some of the silver stocks, they have sprung to life recently too. We were just rattling off a handful of producers, and even the ones in Mexico that have a little bit of that jurisdiction uncertainty have started ratcheting higher lately. Do you anticipate that if we finally do break that $30 ceiling and make it a floor in silver, that some of these stocks, whether they're producers, developers, explorers, the whole gamut, still may surprise investors? Because I don't see a lot of excitement for really the gold or silver stocks, but especially for the silver stocks still. But you know, having gone through these cycles before, what happens when this finally breaks out?
Absolutely. $30 for silver is what $2,100 was for the gold price. So that $30 level is very important to break out above on a weekly closing basis. And you know, silver, it has these huge moves in both directions, and they kind of come from out of nowhere. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a short covering move pretty quickly to 34 once it takes place, and an ultimate target of 40, a cup and handle target of 40 after that. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. Well, you're already starting to see, like we talked about, we're seeing these silver juniors take the lead here, and some of them are having some huge moves, and the permitting risk receding in Mexico is helping also, because a lot of these silver juniors had their projects based in Mexico.
So Dave, what about that continued filtering down of money into some of the juniors, some of the smaller stocks? Because look, the majors, they've been doing okay, but they're still well off their highs. Gold and silver majors, the mid-tiers, they have been doing quite well. But again, it's been kind of this, if you have cash flow, the market's paid a bit more attention. The juniors that need to raise money, but it does seem like there's a window open. They've gotten a little bit of life, but I know our audience is still pretty disappointed at the action in some of the juniors. Have you noticed money coming down the food chain at least a bit more recently?
Yes, that has been taking place for the last month or so, ever since the Q1 financial season started. You started to see that bifurcation of a lot of these juniors that have those attributes of the multi-million ounce projects, you know, with the solid management teams and the access to capital. You're seeing several of those bifurcate, but there's still a lot of them that have yet to play catch up because they're looking for money or they're looking for that access to capital. So yeah, we are starting to see that bifurcation, but once we have that, we've talked about this before, you know, a lot of times in the past of needing to have that silver price close above 30 and that gold silver ratio start trending below 80. I think it's around 80 right now, and it needs to start trending lower below 80. And I think that's going to put more juice into the juniors also once that takes place.
Well, Dave, you've mentioned on the last couple of interviews with us that in your portfolio, you've still remained more focused on companies that were still at a big discount, but had more proof in the pudding than, let's say, an earlier stage drill play. You know, so you were looking at the growth-oriented junior producers, you were looking at the developers that have a pathway to development in the near term, or companies that even have optionality to just higher metals prices because of all the mineral resource they have in the ground. When will you, as the junior miner junkie, even consider maybe more of the drill plays? At what point in the cycle would you have to see more action in the developers first, more takeovers before you went down the food chain? Or what would make you decide to get into more exploration companies?
Yeah, I'd like to see more strategic investments from majors into exploration companies. You know, these companies that are raising $1, $2, $3, $4 million, that's really not moving the needle. Most of that is keep the lights on money, and it'll only give you a 5,000 meter drill program at best. So I'm looking for something like what just recently happened with Hercules Silver, where Barrick came in and gave them a nice chunk of change, and they didn't even visit the project when they gave them that, when they took that strategic investment. So I want to see more strategic investments from these majors into these earlier stage exploration companies. And I want to see more white candles in a lot of these earlier exploration stage companies before I start to get excited. And I do have a few of them on my watch list that haven't really moved much, but they really need that access to capital. I'd like to see them have at least, you know, 10, 15 million to get a decent drill program going and be fully funded for that drill program and have that access to capital to get more down the line.
So then, Dave, still focused broadly on those development plays and even the ones in cash flow. Let's talk about the companies that are going through some sort of a mine build or at least looking to finance a mine build. There's a lot of assets out there that have many economic studies on them that show that they make money and that they should make even more money at these current prices. But the market does not seem to reward these companies until they're actually in production. Where do you see the sweet spot in investing in some of these companies that seem like they should be producing? They're not there yet, but they still have a couple key stepping stones to get through.
Yeah, well, I see plenty of them bifurcating before they get to that mine build or they get to production. As you've been saying, that, you know, these investors, they want to see that clear path to being fully permitted, to having that access to capital, to get that attractive finance package. And the companies that are seeing that, especially if they have more than one strategic partner in the stock, if you have two or three strategic partners that have a nice position and strong shareholders, and then you see that clear access to being fully permitted, those companies are bifurcating. You're seeing a lot of those stocks move higher and leaving some of these other juniors behind. That's not to say that the juniors that have been left behind will not go up later, but that financing window needs to open wider. And like I said, I really like to see more strategic investments from these majors coming into these stocks.
Yeah, Dave, and like you say, a lot of times that golden runway, that year or two before they go into production, we see a big incline. I mean, we just have to look at G Mining to see something like that, where it just had an epic run before they even made it into production. So a lot of these developers could start those golden runways when they get within that 1 year period of time. It just comes down to having the capital raised to actually move forward. There's this other scenario, though, on some of these development stage projects, Dave, I want to ask you about, where they've already drilled multiple seasons, they define good resources, maybe they have some economic studies on them, but they're continuing to drill again this year. But a lot of the companies have pivoted their messaging over the last 6 to 12 months to, we're not going to keep building resources, we're going to go look for new discoveries on our property and try to get a little bit of that alpha investor interest by making new discoveries. Do you think that's a good message for them to go look for new discoveries on their property, or do you think it dilutes down the message of their flagship property, or maybe raises concerns about their flagship property?
I think it's a good message as long as they're moving the permitting forward at the same time. You know, because you have to start that process. Of course, it depends on the jurisdiction that you're in. Because, you know, a lot of these top tier jurisdictions in North America, sure, they're top tier jurisdictions, but it takes 3, 4, 5 years sometimes to get these permits, where you've got a company that's got a top tier project in a West African country that might seem like a more risky jurisdiction, but the timeline to being fully permitted is a lot quicker. You know, a company recently like Osino Resources that, you know, I was fortunate to be in pretty much from the beginning, and my subscribers and I did well in the stock, not as well as we'd have liked, but you know, they're in Namibia, and they went from discovery to being shovel ready within 5 years, and that's unheard of in North America. So, you know, if you've done all the hard work, you've de-risked your project, you've got multi-million ounces, you've shown blue sky potential, but you have to be on that permitting, right? You have to show the market that you've got a credible end to that permitting that's within 1 or 2 years, that you're going to get that environmental permit. And then once you get that environmental permit, usually everything falls into place 6 to 8 months later. That's what investors want to see right now.
What about these companies where their share price has done fairly well? They're kind of a sector leader. And yeah, they do have more exploration they can do, but they're actually also looking at acquiring other land packages or other companies, some with ounces in the ground or pounds in the ground, others that could just be a synergy to the current asset. I can think of a handful of these companies that I've talked to, some of which have actually made some transactions. Other ones are saying they just still see opportunities rather than exploring their own projects, develop a pipeline of future exploration, or also develop or bring in more ounces already in the ground. What do you think of that strategy?
Yeah, I understand that strategy. If you're in that situation where you've de-risked this project and you're just waiting for permitting in the jurisdiction you're in, it's going to take you a while to get that environmental permit. Go out and get a project that's easier to permit, that's faster to get shovel ready. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to do, you know, so many years of baseline studies to get that environmental permit. If you can find something that's in a company that's distressed, that's got 2 or 3 million ounces in the ground, and they're already at the finance stage, but the company doesn't have the access to capital, but you do, but you're just waiting for your permits, then absolutely, that's a great strategy to have.
Well, Dave, I'm going to ask you a similar question that I just asked you, because we got off on permitting, but I want to ask you about drilling, because this could also be for advanced explorers. So advanced explorers or developers, if they've got a big resource already built, their debate has been, if I keep drilling and spending, you know, all this money and raising money and doing the hamster wheel to raise money and drill, 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 I'm not getting rewarded by the market. So a lot of them, and I'm talking dozens of companies, have told us, hey, we're going to start doing discovery drilling on a regional package. Or maybe to Corey's point, maybe they picked up another land package, they're going to drill on that. The concern is, are you messaging to investors that you don't like your big project? Because that's how some people would read that. Or are they trying to find that early stage economics that could beef up the mine plan by finding a higher grade zone? Do you like that strategy, or do you think it's counterproductive?
Well, it depends on the project. You know, a lot of these projects, they're lower grade. So if they've acquired a project that's lower grade and they've done the research and they feel that there's a higher grade core to it, and they want to prove that up to make the numbers better and possibly scale down the initial mine, that you start off with a smaller mine and then make it bigger later, then that could make sense. And also, it depends on where the money is coming from, right? Let's say you have that strategy and you have a strategic partner in a major that agrees with you and gives you the money to finance it with a strategic deal, then that would make sense and the market would like that.
So then, Dave, what about all these companies and news that we continue to get here of PEAs, PFSs, feasibility studies, all these economic assessments that are coming out of these companies a lot because these companies switch focus from aggressively drilling and spending a lot of money to trying to show economics on assets? How are you filtering through all of these? How are you comparing them against each other? What matters to you?
Well, what matters is, you know, the margins, of course, the investment rate of return. You know, a lot of these companies are still using a discount rate of 5% when the 8% would be more factual. I don't know why 5% is still an industry standard, but it is, and they keep using it. So you kind of want to factor that in on your own. Of course, you'd like to see at least 200,000 ounces a year for 10 years on each PFS or feasibility study that comes out. You want to see all-in sustaining costs below $1,200. That would be nice. You know, there's not a lot of projects that could do that. You know, a lot of them are using or are raising their base case also to get better numbers. You know, a lot of these projects before, they would shy away from $1,800 or higher. Well, now they're going to $1,850, $1,950 because the gold price has made a floor now at where once was a ceiling at $2,100. So, you know, if their numbers don't look that great at $1,950 or $1,900, they look really good at the current gold price, and they highlight that. But you got to factor in all these things when you look at these studies. And like I said, also, you know, it's that access to capital. If the company puts out this PEA that's pretty attractive, even at $1,800 or $1,900 gold, but their market cap is $150 million, but they need to raise $500-600 million. If they don't have that access to capital, then the market's probably not going to give much love to the share price when it comes out.
Well, Dave, when you're thinking about these economic studies, a lot of retail investors, I think, struggle with the developers, maybe more so than producers or exploration companies, simply because, like with a drill play, you know what the goal is. You're going to drill in the ground and you hope to find pay dirt. With a production company, you can look at the actual quarterly numbers and assess whether they're growing or shrinking. But on these development companies, you bring up some interesting points on these economic studies. The cutoff grade of the resource, you know, the discount rate that they're using. A lot of times, there can be some vast differences between underground mines versus open pit mines as far as what is realistic and what isn't. And at a PEA, people have called it more of a dream sheet rather than reality. It gets dialed in more on the PFS and then the feasibility study. But when you're looking at these, what kind of red flags do you look for and think, yeah, this looks good on paper, but this is never going to happen in real life?
Yeah. Red flags could be jurisdiction, future happenings that might take place in the jurisdiction. If the company doesn't have the access to capital now, basically you put your CEO hat on of a major minor CEO cap on. You say, would this look good to me? Does it have the blue sky potential? Sure, they've got 3-4 million ounces at a good grade. It's in a good jurisdiction. You know, there's a lot of mines in the area. It's a district scale package, but does it have the blue sky to get a lot bigger? Because these majors are looking for huge mines. They're not looking for these small mines. As long as it's got blue sky potential and the company's done a good job of showing that, then that's going to attract the capital. But that would be a big red flag that the company hasn't shown that blue sky potential on their attractive economic study, if it is attractive.
Oh, man, how many times do we hear, we have this resource, but it's only on 2-4% of our overall land. Everybody has a say on that and says, look at how much more we can explore. Problem is, it's expensive to explore, and you do need to find something good with those dollars that you allocate over there, something that actually moves the needle. I guess, Dave, when we just look at this sector broadly and where the metals prices are, how well they're trading, and the underlying stocks that are doing well, some of the majors that are starting to do well, are we getting into an environment, or could we soon be in an environment where we truly have this rising tide lifting all the stocks, all these metal stocks?
Well, and I've said in the past that in order for that to happen, it looks like we need a solid floor at $30 in silver, and the gold price above 2,500 now, and moving higher, because we've gone to that 2,500 mark, and it really hasn't it hasn't gotten us that dart throwers move in the sector yet. So once this consolidation is over at 500, and the gold price starts to move to its next target, which is $3,000. And the silver price has a $30 floor as opposed to a 4-year ceiling, then I think that'll maybe not lift all the boats, but it'll lift a lot more boats, because let's face it, we'd still like to see a lot of these companies go away. And if that finance window opens wide again, like it did in early 2016 and early and mid 2020, and a lot of these crap juniors get financed again, then we're going to have the same problem of having too many juniors in this space. Because there's only so many checks that these banks can write, and I don't think that's going to happen again, to tell you the truth, because capital's no longer cheap, and you know these banks aren't just going to write checks for any old junior anymore.
Yeah, it's very true. I guess it does depend what sort of other investors we get into this sector, because as encouraging as this move has been, it doesn't seem like people are tripping over themselves to still get into the sector. I think some people are starting to dabble in it, but again, you really need that to pick up if you're going to finance all of these juniors, and undoubtedly the ones that have just cleaned up, almost turned into shells, that will come back out with new projects, and recycled ideas. Dave, thank you for your time. Look, overall, encouraging for the sector. Momentum is finally on trend here, where as long as it continues, boy, oh boy, we could be seeing some big gains. It just might take some time to filter down into some of those smaller stocks. Dave, thank you for your time. We'll post a link to the Junior Miner Junkie and chat again next week.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it.